Welcome to Botanical Trails Through the Juniper Forest. I'm your host, Brian Heater. Each week, I'll have a different guest join me to explore a pair of interesting gins. We'll chat a little bit about the gin and the distilleries, throw in a bit of trivia, hopefully laugh a bit, and then we'll go off the beaten path. Although I say that this is a podcast about gin, really this is just an excuse for me to spend time with my friends. But that'll just be our secret. Okay, let's start exploring. Welcome to season two of Botanical Trails. This is our first episode. My guest today is the person who has known me the longest. It's my mother, Carol Heater, also known as Maki. Mom, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
I feel so pleased to be here.
Well, I knew you were jealous after the girls both got on last season.
I know. I should have been first.
Well, you're not the biggest gin fan compared to my sisters. So, but you do like some of the gins I make, gin cocktails. And so we'll see how this goes. So this is also the second episode of the overarching three-episode Rhine River Chronicles. And today we are doing two Dutch gins. Now, I only picked up one actually in the Netherlands because I didn't want to have to buy an extra suitcase to get all the gin home. Yes. So I found another gin that we will do in the second half of the show that is also from the Netherlands. And so we'll just do two Dutch gins today. And you also like to say you're a little bit Dutch, although that didn't show up in my 23andMe. So.
Well, and you always said that you donated all your Dutch blood out.
I did.
When you donate blood.
So, so do you happen to remember where I tried the Dutch gin that we are trying
today? In the restaurant in Amsterdam.
Yes, that Italian restaurant. When I was like, oh, do you have any gins? And she gave me a menu and I like looked at it and I was like, oh, do you have any local? And she's like, oh, I think we do. And she brought this over and I thought it was pretty good. And it's called Rutte Gin, R-U-T-T-E. And I thought it was really tasty. And I ended up, when we were out shopping the next day, then finding a bottle of it. So I grabbed that and that's what we're having today. So give that a little taste. These are gin and tonics. Cheers.
Cheers.
And let me know what you think.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, just as good as
very
I remember.
Good.
Yeah,
and that you is did good. A little squeeze of lime.
Yes. So I'll talk about the gin in the distillery, but on their website, actually, both of the gins today had a gin and tonic recipe on there that I just followed for the show. And this one is super simple. It is the gin, the Fever Tree Mediterranean tonic, and then it's garnished with lime. So that's what we're having today. So the Rutte Dutch Dry Gin, that's what we're having. This is a modern advancement of their much-awarded celery gin from back in the day. So, in fact, celery leaf is one of the six listed botanicals on their website for this current gin. It appears that this new version came out in late 2021. The company, Rutte Distillery, they originally began making gin back in the 1920s. They started off with an Old Tom gin, so that style. They then branched into dry gin with that celery gin. So the Rutte Distillery, they've been around for, I guess that would be like almost over 150 years. They started distilling back in 1872, and it was Genever, which is kind of like the precursor to gin. It's a Dutch spirit. So the distillery is now owned by the De Kuyper family of brands, but the name and tradition of the Rutte Distillery lives on. So in addition to the Dutch dry gin that we're trying, they also make two other gins. They make a lime gin and a slow gin. So, and then they do six variations of Genever and a few other, they're called Corwins. I didn't look up what this was, but it's some type of like liqueur or spirit that seems to be sort of maybe specific to the Netherlands. I've not encountered it before in any of my other research. So, and when we were, the place I bought these from, I only saw this version of the Rutte gin. So I've not seen, except on their website, like the lime or the slow gin. But anyhow, that's how we got a hold of today's gin. So now, Amsterdam was at the end of our cruise. Mm-hmm. And obviously we started off in Switzerland and worked our way up to the Netherlands. So it was 8 days out on the river, and then we had a couple of extra days in Amsterdam. So what were your top two or three favorite stops, would you say, on that cruise?
Well, I would like to have seen more of the Switzerland that you and your sisters went out on, but I was too exhausted.
Yeah, because we had just
landed. And
then we just left that night.
Yeah, so. Yep. So I think my favorites were Strasbourg, France.
Yep.
Cologne.
Yep.
Germany. And then maybe Rüdesheim.
Oh, okay.
Just because we had so much frickin' fun at that bar.
At the little bar. Yeah, that bar was a lot of fun. Yes.
I mean, Amsterdam was interesting. Crazy with the bicyclists.
How long did it take for you to feel comfortable walking around there? For me, it was a couple of hours.
I would agree with that.
Like, it was just like nothing like
nothing
traffic
I have,
that I've ever seen before.
Nothing I have ever seen in my life. I mean, it's just, and of course they kept building us up. I think when we were in Cologne, that's when they first started to say, this is just a sampling of the bicycling.
That was nothing compared.
But they started us off there just to be aware where we were stepping, to look for bicyclists because they had the right of way, you know. So they started to get that into our minds in Cologne. Because, man, by the time we landed in Amsterdam, we needed it.
Yeah. Well, do you remember when we got off the bus at the hotel? So literally the first stop.
Yes.
The lady behind me almost got crushed.
Well, right.
Like, she didn't look. She just followed me, like, a few steps off the bus, but she didn't even, like, stop to look what she was doing.
Well, and what's so ironic about that is, you know, when the bus pulled up to the hotel, before they even let any of us off, the Viking representative came onto the bus, and she stood in the front of the bus. And she said, now, folks, when you get off this bus, you are stepping right into the bike lane. So you need to be aware of your surroundings. You need to look to your right, because that's the way the bicyclists will be coming. And once you are on the bike path, get off of it as quickly as possible. Don't dilly-dally.
Well, no, they have the right of way.
They have the right of way. And like you said, oh, my gosh, Brian, that woman... It was like she didn't even hear the Viking representative. She stood off. She got off that bus and just stepped right into that lane. And that young gentleman was coming, and he slammed on his brakes.
Oh, yeah.
Brakes.
He had to, like, yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't curse at her. He didn't ring a bell. He just slammed on his brakes. And then the other gentleman, afterwards, got off the bus and was standing in the bike path, just looking up at the hotel. And
her husband?
It wasn't her husband.
Oh,
it was another
oh, okay.
one of the guests. And, you know, the Viking gal said, get off the bus.
Yeah. It's
just different there. It's different. I mean, it's unbelievable. You have to see it to believe it.
Yeah. So I would say, my favorite were definitely Strasbourg. I really like that. That was just a fun day, you know, because we were off on our own most of the day. We mm-hmm. had a 2 hour, I think, walking
tour. We had the tour in the morning, but then...
That was nice, and that guy was great. But then, you know, we just kind of got to spend the whole day there. Amy got that perfume for Gemma
there. I bought Gemma a necklace of the...
Yep, and we went and got that stuff at the art store for Ezzy, and then I found those two French gins mm-hmm. there that will be the last part of the Rhine River Chronicle. So that was all there. I thought Cologne was a lot of fun.
Cologne was a lot of fun. The walking tour was interesting.
That was nice. And so was the when we did the brew houses that night. And that family from Wisconsin that we got matched up with. Wisconsin and Chicago, I think they were.
Right,
in
both, right.
But they were, like, super nice.
They were.
So that was a lot of fun. And then I also enjoyed, now you did a different thing, but when it was, I think, the first day, not when we arrived, but the next day, but
right.
when we went out to the Black Forest.
Yeah, that was a Breisach.
Yeah, I really like that. I like the hike. Like, I wish we could have gotten more time to spend there to, like, walk in the woods a bit more.
That's what
stuff.
You said, because you and your sisters did the hike. I opted to do the...
Yeah, it was super slow.
Right. I opted to go into the cuckoo clock making facility, which was very interesting to learn about the cuckoo clocks and how they make them. And then there was also the gentleman blowing glass. that was interesting to watch him. He was blowing little teeny birds. I mean, it was amazing, you know, just so impressive. And then, of course, we got to watch the Black Forest cake demonstration.
Yeah, so when we were done with the hike, we met up with you for that.
Right.
Got to do that and try a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely kind of a booze heavy.
Oh, man. Cake. Didn't he almost pour that whole bottle into it?
I don't know if it was the whole bottle, but it was definitely not a dash.
Well, because he said the recipe might call for a dash or an ounce or something like that, but he said don't pay attention. He just kept pouring that liquor into the cake. It was like, whoa.
I think he was having a little bit of fun with that. So.
Yeah, I think he was. Maybe pulling our leg a little bit. I don't know.
So, and that is, if I remember correctly, the second time, first time you've done like a river cruise, second time in your life, right? You've been on a cruise. You and your best friend Nancy did a cruise like years and years ago. Is that
well,
right?
Well, this is or my no. first river cruise.
Right. Yep.
But Nancy wouldn't go. When we were seniors in high school, it was our trip was to the Bahamas. And Nancy wouldn't go, my best friend Nancy, because she wanted to stay home during spring break with her boyfriend.
Oh.
So I went anyway with a bunch of other classmates. So we bussed down to Miami, and then we got on the cruise ship over to the Bahamas. And then we were in Bahamas, I don't know, a couple of days, and then we had to...
Wait, so were you on the... Did you stay on the ship, or was it more of like a ferry that took you over?
Oh, no, it was a ship.
It was a cruise ship.
Oh, okay. I mean, none of these large ones, like Princess...
No.
I don't even recall what it was, but... So, the night before we were supposed to land in Miami, we were told to put our luggage out in the hallways, and they would all come and grab the luggage and put it in the luggage stowaway place in the ship, you know. Because when we woke up in the morning, we were supposed to be in Miami.
Okay.
So we only were able to keep, you know, like our pajamas, a change of clothes, toiletries in our room that last night. So when we wake up, we're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Did they get lost?
No, the generator died on the ship. So they had wired ahead for some mechanic to come out and fix this generator. But we were adrift for 10 hours.
Wow.
And of course, you know, all of our stuff had been packed into the luggage.
Yeah.
So no sunscreen, no nothing. So we're all sitting up on the upper deck of the ship. We all got burnt to a crisp. I got sun poisoning in my legs. And
what is sun poisoning?
Well, it's I got extremely sunburned, and of course my knees were like this because we were sitting in chairs, and so I got extremely burned on my legs and the knees. And so, you know, when I would go to straighten my leg out, of course it hurt like you know what. Mm-hmm. Because I'm but then I just swelled, my legs just swelled up.
Oh no.
And because I was so sunburned. And so when we finally get to Miami, I was the person that had to start the phone chain, if you will. So I had to call my parents and say, we are now just departing Miami. We have been delayed. So we're not going to arrive in Kalamazoo till approximately 10 hours later, you know. So then we had the bus ride up from Miami on a Greyhound bus. And so they told me to sit in the seat and have my feet elevated, leaning up against the back of the seat in front of me, just for drainage of all that fluid that was in my legs. And they said, you got sun poisoning, you know. So it was a nasty ride home.
Yeah, that
sure.
Sounds not great. Well, yeah. I'm glad this cruise went much better.
Oh, far better. Far. And it was even more fun. But, so when I went to the Bahamas, I was 18.
Yep.
Drinking age was 14 in the Bahamas.
Wow.
So I had my first legal drink in the Bahamas.
What was it? Do you remember?
A grasshopper.
A grasshopper.
That's with cream de mint and cream de coco, cream de cacao, however it's pronounced.
Okay. So kind of a little foo-foo cocktail.
It's a foo-foo creamy cocktail.
Yeah. But it's probably great down in the Bahamas.
Oh, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nice.
Yeah.
It's like vacation in a glass, just like Scott loves. So. Yeah, no, I thought that thought the cruise was really nice. So, and I thought Viking did a great job of just making, like, the travel super easy. You know, the rooms weren't huge, but that was fine because we weren't in it that much.
Right, you're not in the room.
No, you know, my only concern really was, like, I made sure I didn't want to eat too much ever because I didn't know if I'd get out of the bathroom. The bathroom is very tight.
The bathroom is small quarters, but yeah, when, you know, when you and your sisters proposed that you wanted to take me anywhere I wanted to go.
Well, within reason, but.
Within reason. And I wanted to do something none of us have ever done before, which is hard to do with all the travel you've done and Lori and Amy. It was tough to get all of that squared away. And so I'd heard nothing but good things about these Viking River cruises. So that's when I started to research that. And that's what we agreed to do. And I, you know, I must admit, I was a little bit concerned that maybe you guys would think it'd be hokey.
No, I mean, I didn't think it'd be hokey. I mean, you know, Brian Place, who's on two episodes last season, I mean, he had been on one, like, the right. year before we went. He was the one who, you know, just sort of raved about it. So, I mean, I knew someone who had been on it. You right. had some friends who had been on one. So, I mean, we got, like, right. we had good, reliable firsthand sources who were like, no, this is, like, definitely, mm-hmm. like, worth it, yes. you know, to go do yeah. it.
So. And it was so much fun. And, I mean, the crew, the captain, the program director, they just all made it such a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it was great to see, like, just parts of Europe I hadn't ever seen right. before, so that was a lot of fun.
And all the never-ending food, and oh my goodness gracious.
Now, is it true you almost had to buy an extra suitcase to take home all the souvenirs you got in the red light district, or was that
yeah, right.
Not true. I couldn't remember what the girl said, so.
You know that's not true at all.
All right. Are you ready for the first round of gin trivia?
Sure, but you
are. I'm going first.
So I ask you.
You can ask me.
All righty. Let me get my reader cheaters out. Old Tom Gin reportedly got its name from which animal?
A cat.
Oh, you knew this one.
Because back in
ding, ding, ding. Oh, Tomcat.
The Tomcat, because when Andy was on, we did Old right. Tom Gin. So.
Yeah, because, yep. yes, a cat. One story is of a cat falling to its death in a vat of gin.
I didn't hear that one.
That's not a very good.
I didn't hear that one, but it used to be like, if you wanted to go find a place to get gin, you would look for a place that had like a cat. Like picture
part of its logo or
yeah, like a logo is sitting out there, and you could go and they would pour you like a little bit of gin. So yeah, all right. Well, you're gonna have to get going on that. Well, no, you don't have to slam it.
Are you done?
Well, it was really good. So
well, it is good.
but we will.
Do you ask me now or later?
No. That's
second half.
Yeah, you claim to have listened to these, and yet you don't know how this works. I don't understand.
I've listened to every single one of them.
I know, I'm just
them.
Teasing you. So. No, we're going to take a little break, and then I'm going to go get our sippers and the second drink ready, and then we'll be back. All right, we are back. We had talked before recording. You're interested in trying a little sipper of each of those. So the first one is the Ruta. I'm glad I Googled right before we started how to pronounce it. I would have totally gotten
that. Well, that's
that
what wrong. I wondered, yeah.
I thought it was going to be root or rute, but it's ruta. So,
yeah.
So give this a little sip. I did put a little bit of water in there to try to
okay,
unlock so the botanicals. It. Just sip it.
Don't chug it.
I wouldn't. I think that's got a nice flavor.
It's tingling my nose, but it does have a nice flavor.
Yeah, there's a slight burn with it, but not bad. But I mean,
no.
Like, but, like, drinking that on its own is actually
on the rocks. Shabby.
Yeah, you might be able to get, like, this and then put, like, just a little lime on top of it on mm-hmm. the rocks. You might be able to get away with
yeah.
that. All right. Well, that was the Ruta, and I wish I knew that waitress's name from our Ooh. Restaurant because she...
Ooh, now it's
totally. She totally introduced me to that, and I'm thankful that was a tasty gin. So... The second gin we are trying today, I have never had this before, so this will be a first for both of us. I went to one of my little favorite shops in town, Rishi's, and I was like, hey, do you have any you know, good gins from the Netherlands. And he said this one is his favorite. He has not steered me wrong in the past. So we are going to try this. It is called Dutch Courage Dry Gin. So let's take a little sip of, this.
First.
Yep, first to see how that goes. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Check it out. It's a little more citrusy to me.
Right, but yet similar.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're both dry gins, so, right. But I mean, and if I remember correctly, neither one has like a ton of botanicals in it. So, you know, they should be pretty fairly straightforward, but this one's also tasty. I do think this one burns a little less going down. Not that the other one burned a lot, but...
Right.
I mean, you know it's alcohol, but it's not like it sets your throat on fire.
Right.
Well, that was good.
Ooh, it's burning me, though.
Well, you might be more sensitive.
I probably am.
So, and then the cocktail is just a gin and tonic. It's a recipe right off of their thing. They recommended the Indian tonic with an orange... garnished with an orange, like an orange peel. I just put a little bit of orange juice in there, and I use the light Indian premium tonic just because before you know it's going to be swimsuit season. So, you know,
please don't remind me.
So give that cocktail a try and let me know what
you
think.
Do we need to clink?
Yep. Cheers. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. I taste the orange.
Yeah. No, I could see myself enjoying this on a warm summer day.
Yeah.
For sure. That's really tasty.
It's not like you don't have a plethora of, or a plethora of gins to try.
We don't really need to bring that up, Mom. So, as some people say, I have a gin problem and it's I can't get enough of it. So, okay. Dutch Courage Dry Gin. This is comes from the Zoutdam Distillers. The gin itself is composed of 9 botanicals. Including 2 that kind of stood out to me because I hadn't seen these in other gins I've tried. One is a licorice root from India, and the other is vanilla from Madagascar. So those are 2 of the 9 that are in there. One of my favorite websites, The Gin Is In, it describes this gin as being citrusy at first, but with a rich, spicy character, with notes of violet, anise, and pine note accented juniper. Now, that kind of makes me laugh just because everyone feels juniper tastes like pine, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Anyhow, I thought that was a funny way to describe it. So, but they describe it as having a dry, clean finish and is an easy-drinking, well-balanced, classic gin. It has won a number of awards. The distillers, it's relatively new. It was founded in 1975 by Fred Van Zoutdam. It's located down in the southern Netherlands, and they're one of the last independent distilleries in the Netherlands that still makes and processes all of their own distillates and extracts in a traditional Dutch manner, is what I'm assuming that was. Two little funny quick stories when I was reading about them. One, Fred was really just more concentrated on the product back in the day, so he was just using the same style bottle for all of their products. Those proved to be not that popular. So his wife, Helene, she stepped in and began designing the packaging and the bottling, and that really actually helped to turn things around for them.
Oh, wow.
So, and to create a truly Dutch feel for their drinks, their grain is milled across 9 local windmills. Down near the distillery. So, in addition to gin, they also make Genever, vodka, rum, whiskey, and some other liqueurs. So, now, do you have a guess as to where the name Dutch Courage comes from? Because sometimes Dutch Courage is like a nickname for gin. Would you have a guess as to where the name Dutch Courage comes from?
Well, you should have given me a heads up. I could have researched.
Why? That wouldn't be fun.
Dutch Courage. Dutch Courage. I have absolutely no...
That's fine, because I didn't either until I was researching this. So, I came across a couple stories. And so the name Dutch Courage, where does this originate from? So, according to a couple of different sources I read about, back in... like the late 1500s, early 1600s, in what is considered a time frame called the 20-Year War, the English were fighting alongside the Dutch over on the continent. So, and the Dutch would take a swig of Genever before going into battle. And Genever is kind of like that precursor of gin. So, so they would, you know, take a swig of Genever before they'd head off into battle. Hence, Dutch courage.
Sure.
So it gave them the courage to go and get in the scrap. So while over there fighting alongside the Dutch, the English began to develop a taste for Genever. They brought it home with them and then kind of began making their own versions of it, which ended up evolving into what we now know as gin.
I'll be darned.
So, anyhow, that's where the little phrase Dutch courage comes from, and hence where this type of gin, or this gin, gets its name from. So, that is Dutch courage.
But, well, you know, and when we did the first gin, the Rute,
Ruta,
and you said that celery leaves are in that.
Yes, that's one of the botanicals.
Because, you know, Kalamazoo has a huge Dutch community. Well, in Grand Rapids does
Grand Rapids,
too.
West Michigan, Holland.
right. But Kalamazoo was known for the celery flats.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wonder if when the Dutch came over here, if they're the ones that started up the Dutch celery flats. That'd be interesting.
In Kalamazoo? Yeah, maybe. Could be.
Yeah. I don't know.
What
something
part of
to research.
Those,
they were down in Portage.
Okay.
And now it's been turned into a outdoor park walking area. So a lot of people walk the celery flats. They don't grow celery there anymore.
I think Lori was running there when she was training for that
she
half
might have
marathon
been.
Or marathon.
Right.
So.
Right. It's a very popular place to go stroll.
Huh. Interesting.
Yes.
Did you, when we had that little garden out in Oshimo, did you grow celery?
Did not.
Okay.
I think we grew everything but celery. We did carrots, but we didn't do celery.
Yeah, I remember carrots, watermelon, radishes, corn on the cob.
Green beans, wax beans, you said watermelon, cantaloupe, broccoli, cauliflower.
Yeah, I think I ate the corn.
You did?
That was about it.
That's why the garden originally started 25 by 50, and then it just kept getting downsized, because you kids wouldn't eat. Other than the corn, you wouldn't eat any of the other fresh vegetables. Zucchini. I made zucchini cookies up the yin yang.
And bread.
And bread.
Zucchini bread.
But so that 25 by 50 garden eventually ended up alongside of the garage.
Yeah, I remember. But I remember back when it was bigger, I liked taking, like in the fall, once everything was done, taking my wiffle ball bat out into the corn stalks and just like... Knocking all the old
the dried
stalks.
Stalks.
Yeah, the dried stalks. So,
yeah. I mean, you can't beat fresh corn on the cob. You know, you go out and you pick it and then you eat it. I mean, you can't get any fresher than that.
Nowadays, I would eat, I bet, over half of what.
Oh, I bet you would now, too.
I still don't like radishes, but I like most of the other stuff these days.
I didn't like radishes, but your dad did.
Yeah.
So that was one of his things. But yeah, you wouldn't eat, you wanted beans out of a can. You didn't want fresh green beans.
They tasted better back to me back then. So I'm sure it was all the additives and salt.
Oh,
and
I'm sure. Yeah. All that sodium.
So, if I remember correctly, the River Cruise is the second time you've been to Europe. And you've been, in addition to the Bahamas, you've been to Japan, Tokyo. You've been to Thailand. Been to Italy, Rome. We did the cruise, and you've been to Australia. Am I missing any international trips?
Oh, international? No, I was going to add in Hawaii, but that's not international.
Okay, so of the international trips that you've done, what would you say if you had to pick one as your favorite spot? What was your favorite spot?
Oh my gosh!
I know they were all fun in different
ways,
but like, what was your favorite?
They were all wonderful. I mean, Italy, you know, you and Jen took me to Italy, and that was amazing. And you took me to Tokyo, and that was my first international travel. So that was eye-opening. But I think if I were really pressed, I would have to say Thailand.
Oh, okay.
And the reason for that is, of course, the first week was yoga. Which...
You lost a bet? Is that how you had to go
do
the...
Yeah. I asked Amy if I could go on the trip and not do the yoga. But she said, well, you should probably try.
Well, especially since she was like one of the yoga leaders,
she was one of the hosts, yes. So, you know, your sister Lori and I went. But the second week, we moved into the city of Chiang Mai. And that was a wonderful city. And we volunteered for 2 days out at an elephant sanctuary.
Yeah, that's right.
So we were involved with feeding the elephants, mixing up the food for these two senior elephants they called grandmas because they were 80 plus years old.
The elephants were?
The two elephants, the two female, well, they're basically all female at this elephant sanctuary because Lee, who runs the sanctuary, doesn't take in the male elephants because she doesn't want babies. You know, she's got enough elephants. Because when we were there in 2020, she had 80 female elephants to take care of.
80?
Wow. So these two grandmas had no teeth. So
just
she
like
said,
my grandma.
Well,
just kidding.
So she said in the wild, you know, they would have died because they can't. There was nothing they could eat.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't chew anything. But what we did is we mixed up these huge, huge containers of, it was oats and squashed fruit like bananas and watermelons and all sorts of fruit that was all squished together. And then we would form them into about the size of a baseball.
Okay.
And then we hand fed the two grandmothers. And that's what they were sustaining on.
Huh.
Because they could eat that.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't anything to chew.
Like, so they just sort of swallow it or gum it?
Well,
or
they
something?
Would just gum it, I think, okay. And swallow. Maybe they just swallowed it. But it was amazing because the other elephants, when they would go to feed them, they'd put an entire watermelon down. And the elephant would take 1 foot and just stomp on it and break it up into pieces. And then would pick up a piece at a time and ingest it that way. You know, chew on it and swallow it. So, and they did that with pumpkins, and...
I've done that with M&Ms before, to get through the shell.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Not peanut M&Ms.
Yeah, you know I don't like peanut M&Ms.
Yeah, not peanut for you. But, so, just being a part of watching those elephants and how much now they trust humans because they were tortured by humans, and that's why they were at the animal sanctuary. She would rescue them from torture.
Because they were used for, like, carting people around, right?
Carting and people,
like side
you know,
shows.
Tree clearing, you know, hauling. But they would torture them first to be submissive and do what the humans wanted them to do. So they, you know, they hated humans. But she was so kind and gentle, and she was involved in every single rescue of the elephants. And so they worship her. Oh, my goodness. She is their savior. And when they see her walking around the grounds, they just charge to her to be around her. It was just amazing. So
yeah.
So that was so special. And I've... And, of course, COVID set in right after that.
Yeah, it was, like, hitting was,
yeah,
there.
I was sitting here watching.
Like, I was like, you guys.
Right.
Know, I was
we,
just pulling.
We barely got out. Home before things started to shut down.
Yep.
But I so wanted to go back and volunteer. Just go to the elephant sanctuary. Because you can volunteer there for days, weeks, months, whatever you want.
Oh.
And they put you up. They give you room and board. And the food was fabulous. I mean... But, you know, that's what she relies on is volunteers to help with all, because not only elephants, but she also had dogs and cats that she'd rescue and
okay.
all sorts of animals. So
yeah, I guess from the different times you've talked about being there, I didn't realize it was that many elephants, I guess.
Yes.
So, wow.
And I can't recall now how many acres it was, but
it's got to be.
It was huge. But they... She explained when we were there, two different elephants that has escaped where they came from, escaped and ran into this elephant sanctuary. It was like they knew that they were going to be saved. So,
like the elephants were out and somehow got in?
Yeah, they got in, and so Lek would go back to wherever the elephants came from, and she would buy them from the owners.
Huh.
So they no longer were tortured. They no longer were used for physical labor. But it was so interesting. Like, they had heard that there's a paradise up the hill.
Yeah.
You know, let's get to the paradise.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So that was interesting. But when she passes, when Lek passes.
Who's the
owner of the sanctuary.
And the original.
And the way that they just, it's amazing. I said, they're going to have to, you know how the elephant mourn their loved ones.
Yeah.
They're going to have to see that she is gone, that she has passed on. Or they're just going to wonder what the heck happened to her.
Yeah.
Why did she just disappear? You know, it's like they're going to have to let the elephants mourn her.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe some type of ceremony or something.
Because, so. You know, they last, you know, they 80, 90 years old. And
elephants?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think probably Lek now is maybe in her 60s, maybe.
Okay.
So, anyway, so to answer your question, I think if I had to boil it down.
Yeah.
Thailand Elephant Sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know how much you loved it there, so that's a good one. So.
Yeah, because elephants and giraffes are my two favorite animals. Yeah.
Followed by dogs, I'm guessing, since you're constantly watching them for your girls.
My grand doggers, as yeah. I say. Yes. I love dogs. I love animals.
No, you do. So.
You know, I had to hold a koala in Australia. You know?
Yes. One of the dumbest animals I've ever encountered.
Yeah, they are dumb. But,
but they are cute. So. Okay. Are you ready for round two?
Of trivia?
Trivia.
This is when you...
Yep, this is when I ask you.
Oh, dear. You know, I've gotten them a lot of times when I've listened to your podcast, so let's hope I do so.
Hmm. Well...
I didn't like that.
You've got a 33.333% chance of this one.
Oh, jeez.
And I'll ask the question, and then I'll sort of give you a hint, but not a big hint. But question is, what animal appears on a bottle of Opir, Oriental Spice Gin, elephant, giraffe, or zebra? Now, this is a gin that was actually on the episode that Greg and I did. And so there was a picture of this out on the Instagram page.
And what's the gin called?
Opir, but it's spelled O-P-I-H-R. Okay. And again, the three options are an elephant, a giraffe, or a zebra?
I'm going to go with giraffe.
Hmm.
Wrong.
Is that your final answer? I shouldn't have answered it that way.
Should I have said zebra?
Oh, nope. You definitely... Nope. It's an elephant.
Oh!
Which is hilarious that you were just talking about them. And this card just randomly came up, like, for real.
Well, man, I just flunked that test.
So funny that it was an elephant. So, that's funny. So...
Hmm.
All right. Well, anything else that you wanted to chat about before we dive into everyone's favorite segment, Off the Beaten Path?
Off the Beaten Path. I guess I want to ask you what your favorite spots were on the cruise.
Oh, like I mentioned, it was, again, Strasbourg, Cologne, and the Black Forest. Those are my three.
Oh, that's right. You did mention
those are my three favorite.
Yes.
I mean, the other places were all really nice.
Right.
The only place I could have done without was that. Little stop we did.
Find a stick or whatever.
The first stop in the Netherlands was just the windmills. Like, there wasn't much
that's
to that place.
One. Yeah.
But I guess if you wanted to go see the windmills, I mean, that would be fun. But
that was my least favorite as well.
Yeah. I mean, that one is just... It just didn't interest me.
Right.
But the unfortunate part was there just wasn't anything else around, like, where we docked.
Exactly.
Like, we went out looking for a cafe or something.
They had
something.
A souvenir shop, but that was
maybe,
about it.
But yeah. But, I mean, it was basically, like, a neighborhood.
Right.
So, there wasn't just much there.
Yes, this is true.
I don't think it was a big city or anything like that either. So
it's not.
And so, I'm sure those little windmills are just kind of like a little touristy place that are designed to kind of show people, like, how they really work and stuff like that. And probably, I mean, and a ton of people from the cruise went to go check them out. So, that one didn't interest me a ton. So.
So, let's do it.
Okay. All right. I will go first, as we had discussed. So, originally I was like, I like to always try and tie something in. And at first I was like, have I read, like, an interesting Dutch novel, or have I seen a good Dutch movie? Well, it ends up the answer is no. I just haven't. Not that there's not good ones out there, but I just haven't. So that wasn't an option. So then I was like, well, let me find something that kind of ties into mom then. So.
Uh-oh.
No. It's good. So my option is a movie. It is from 1985. It stars John Cusack. Do you know what this is?
Better Off Dead.
Yes.
Ding, ding,
Better
ding,
Off
ding.
Dead. So it is a kind of a family favorite of ours. If you have not seen the movie, John Cusack stars as a high school kid named Lane. He loses his girlfriend to this guy who is like captain of the ski team. Lane takes it really hard, so he decides he's just going to like end it all. But he is just as unsuccessful.
Yes.
In trying to do that as he is in trying to date. Just completely inept.
Yes.
But the just the storyline and the cast of characters, I mean, the movie is just very funny, I think. So he's got this like genius brother who just he's always just like ordering things to figure stuff out. He's got a mom who can't cook. He's got the neighbors across the street who end up getting this French exchange student named Monique, who ends up liking him and kind of helps him get over, I think, Beth, if I remember correctly, is the name of the girlfriend.
Yes.
There's the paper boy who always wants the $2 to collect
from
the paper.
I want my $2.
And then there are those, I think they're brothers, the Japanese brothers, who one grew up just listening to Howard Cosell.
Yes, yes.
And they drive the car and they're always just trying to drag race him. And then the guy who played Booger from Revenge of the Nerds is like his best friend. Anyhow, it's a very funny movie, pretty family friendly. I mean, it's just like PG. It's on multiple platforms. You can watch it on like Prime, Hulu, Showtime. But if you're just looking for like a fun movie that I think still stands up. I mean, it's still really funny. We just watched it a couple years ago.
Oh, well, and we watched it, you know, way back when.
Yeah, yeah.
Over and over and
over. Well, we had it on, like, VCR tape.
Right. But every time we watched it, we found something more that we had missed.
Yeah.
And the one line I like among many of them was when John Cusack falls into a garbage truck. I don't know how he fell into a garbage truck. I can't remember that.
He, like, went to kill himself by jumping off a bridge.
Oh, that was right.
And the truck was just
as the truck's going underneath the bridge. But then they go underneath another bridge, right? And then there's those two black road workers up on top of the bridge that see the garbage truck going underneath them with John Cusack laying in the back of the garbage truck. And they say, well, look at that. It's a shame that some white folks are throwing away a perfectly good white boy.
Yeah, that movie is just, what kills me is his little brother. He's just, he's got all these little, like, schemes going on. It's like, it's a funny movie. So, anyhow, that is my pick for Off the Beaten Path.
All right, well, and one more thing. Well, who is the guy that played his father played in MASH?
Oh.
Didn't he play Winston in MASH?
Yes. Yep.
So, because he's talking about his son's infatuation with this Beth.
Yes.
And the wife says, well, I wouldn't say he's infatuated with her. Just as she's saying that, they're showing a clip of John Cusack's closet, and every one of the hangers has a picture of Beth on it.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say he's infatuated.
Well, also, isn't the younger brother constantly, like, back in the day, like, on cereal boxes, you could, like, cut out a mail-in thing.
Yes.
But he would cut it out with the full box of cereal. So whenever they went to pour cereal out, it just poured out of the bottom.
Come out the hole that he had cut. Yep. Yep.
So, Better Off Dead, I definitely recommend it. So.
All right. Well, so now shall I do my Off the Beaten Path?
Yep. That's how it works. Your turn.
Okay. Well, and this is kind of going back to the cruise in a way.
Okay.
Because when we were in Strasbourg, France, well, Cologne, Germany, but almost all of the cities that we had stopped at, they were talking about, you know, during World War II, how much damage they suffered. Like Cologne, they said, had 92% of that city was destroyed in World War II, and they have rebuilt it. Some of it to look old and original, but some of it the new architecture. So there's controversy about folks like it or don't like the new architecture. But But almost every one of those towns that we went through, the walking tour in the morning talked about especially the churches and the cathedrals.
Yep.
And how they would, during World War II, they removed all of the stained glass from the churches and cathedrals to save them. And they hid them. And the Nazis found them and stole them amongst all the other artwork and museums and Jewish homes. You know, they just steal all of this artwork and pile it up in these mines and everything to hide it. And so when we were on the cruise, they talked about a movie that was made about resurrecting, saving, finding all of the stolen art. And that was called The Monuments Men.
Yep.
And it's a 2014 film. Quite the cast. It has George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, Kate Blanchett, you know. And so it's a true story based on a group of men that President Roosevelt, you know, charges with trying to find all of the stolen lost art. And, you know, and George Clooney's character was called Frank Stokes. And he's the one that approached President Roosevelt, you know, said, the victory of winning the war is going to be less than it should be if we have lost all of the art from the Western civilization. The victory is going to be less than we would want it to be. So that it would have little meaning, you know, if we won the war, but all the art
lost
was
all
gone.
That culture.
All that culture was gone. So they were charged with going over and trying to find all of this stolen art, which they did. I think there was originally 8 men that were charged with this, and 2 of them died in their efforts to reclaim all of this art. But so these men were not necessarily, I mean, they had all served in the war at one point or not, when they were younger men too, but maybe, I don't know, but
I don't know that all of them were, but
not all of them, but they were, you know, museum directors, art curators, architects, you know, they had all of this history, this background, art historians. And so they searched for this art and they returned it to the rightful owners. And that's where Kate Blanchett's character comes in, because she journaled all of the stolen art. Where it came from, who the owners were, where it was hidden. And she held on to this journal. She didn't trust anyone with all of this information. And so eventually she gives this to Matt Damon. And that's one of the reasons they were able to find all of the stolen art. Which, amongst all of this art that they found, they also found the entire gold reserve for the Nazis. And that was, if you, have you seen the movie?
I saw the movie, yeah, actually, when it was in the theater.
Yeah.
So
when they found that in this mine shaft, and of course it was all dark in this mine shaft, and they had little flashlights or whatever, and so they saw all this gold, and they were like, what the heck, you know? And so then it was Bill Murray that found the switch to turn on all the lights. And when he flipped that switch up to turn on all of the lights, it was just never-ending gold.
Yeah.
And so so that had to hit the Nazis in their gold national treasury. But anyway, the movie, when it came out, kind of received negative reviews. I don't know why.
I don't know why. I mean, like I said, I saw it in the theater. I mean, I thought it was a really... I mean, one, it was a good movie, but on top of that, I mean, it's a true story, and it's amazing what
it's
they were trying
story.
To do, you know, I mean, yeah, a lot of that stuff just amazes me, that they had the forethought, like, you're not only trying to, like, defeat the Nazis and earlier on, like, you know, the fascists out of Italy, and then obviously you also have the Japanese, I mean, you've got that access, but that they're like, hey, we just don't need to beat them, like, we can't let them get away with trying to just destroy parts of, like, our history and our culture.
Oh, right,
and,
right.
You know, that. But I don't know, that they had the forethought, and then that we also had political leaders that, like, understood the ramifications of not trying to, you know, remedy that.
Right.
You know, it's a pretty amazing story.
Right.
So,
and by the time all was said and done, now it's President Truman's era. So he asks Frank Stokes, a.k.a. George Clooney, you know, you lost two men in this mission. Was it worth it? And so then they show a clip of him as a senior gentleman with his grandson, or great-grandson, perhaps, and they're looking at the Madonna and the Child, which is one of the pieces they had resurrected.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, it's worth it. So, but when we were on those walking tours in Strasbourg and Cologne, those stained glass panes were found after the Nazis stole them and hid them. They were found and restored to the churches.
Yeah.
And so we got to see all of that beauty.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, yeah. No, that was a good movie. That's a good choice. So
it was. And appropriate.
Very much so, especially with the cruise.
Yes.
Ties in for the Rhine River Chronicles. Nice job. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for being the guest on
episode 1
of season 2. Obviously, it's a little tricky since you're also 25% of my listening audience, one of 4 listeners. But
yes.
I just hope you listen to this one, even though you're
here. Oh, maybe I will.
Well, we'll see. You never know. So, but thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back, hopefully soon, with the next episode, which won't be the Rhine River Chronicles, but it'll be a fun returning guest. And then after that, we will get to the French gins and wrap this series up. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
well,
all right.
Thank you.
You bet. See you soon. Thanks for joining us. Feel free to subscribe to us on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts. Also, I want to take a quick minute to thank Darren Vandermullen for all of his help behind the scenes. Without him, this podcast probably wouldn't even exist, and his help is greatly appreciated. Hope you have a great week, and we will look forward to seeing you the next time we go down the botanical trails. This has been a Shits and Giggles production.